This is H10, Hanshin Tigers English News, where Hanshin Tigers fans all around the world unite and catch up on the team that sends their coach into brawls for dropkicks. I'm your host, T-Ray. Today is April the 11th, 2017, and this is episode 56. Welcome to the show. Guess what, everybody? I've got a co-host, I've got a guest for the first time in like 6 months. It's only six episodes, but anyways, welcome to the show, Eric.
Thank you very much. Happy to be around.
Yeah, it's good to have discovered you. And actually, I found you, Eric, on the NPB Reddit site. You were doing an Ask Me Anything on there, and you were talking about your experience with the Hanshin Tigers Oendan. And so I just dropped you a note and said, hey, do you mind coming on the show sometime? And you jumped on it, so I appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem at all. Always happy to talk about the Tigers. Good to finally find an outlet. Now that I'm back in North America, nobody wants to hear about them, so it's good to finally find somebody to chat about them with.
Sure. Well, tell us a little bit about yourself, Eric, before we jump into today's show.
Yeah, sure. I'm 32, living in New York City right now, working in advertising, but more relevant to this show, I guess, would be the time that I spent in Japan. 4 years in total, from 2005 to 2006 as an Akaiwa teacher, and then again from 2008 to 2011 as a member of the JET program. And from 08 to 11, I was stationed in Nishinomiya, a 10-minute walk from Koshien Stadium. And yep. As you know, a certain baseball team plays there. And As we will discover, I kind of fell in with the fandom a little bit.
Nice, nice. So your 05-06, when you were an Akaiwa teacher, was that not in Kansai, or what was that about?
No, that was up north in Niigata, city called Nagaoka.
Okay. Pretty tough to follow any baseball from there. But are you a fan of ball, like MLB, before you came to Japan?
Yeah, I'm actually Montreal born and raised. So growing up, I was one of about 18 Expos fans in captivity. huge Expos fan. I grew up on Vladimir Guerrero, yeah. Pedro Martinez, all those guys.
Yes, yes.
So I guess when I headed over in 05, that was pretty soon after the disastrous departure down to Washington in 2004. Mm-hmm. So I kind of had a hole in my heart, the shape of a baseball team. I was looking for a Japanese team to fill it up, and I got a pretty good anecdote about how I fell in with the Tigers at that point.
Well, we'll talk about that in a little bit just after the break, but before we jump into the break, let's talk about number 56 since we're on episode 56. One of the first number 56 in team history was a man by the name of Mike Solomko. He was also the very first import on the team, at least non-Nikkei, Japanese background import. So he was with the team from 1960 through 1963. And our most recent and our current number 56 is Ryoma Matsuda, who was drafted out of high school in 2011 in the fifth round. He is now on the top squad doing some good job as a reliever, and hopefully he will take over either as the setup man or the closer in the future. All right, let's take a short break and we will come right back to you.
Who's in the chair? Who's tea talking to? Who's in the chair? Maybe veteran, maybe who? Who's in the chair? Who's in the chair? Who's in the chair?
So, as we said earlier, we've got Eric on the show, and I really want to dig a little bit deeper with you, Eric, about your background with the Tigers, your background in baseball, all that kind of stuff. And so let's go back to 2005 when you came over and you were in Niigata. And I think I cut you off. You were going to say something about following baseball there. So what was that like?
Well, I mean, when I first arrived in Japan, it would have been August of 05. Mm-hmm. And I didn't speak any Japanese whatsoever. I was fresh off the plane, as you would say. So a bit of an intimidating situation, I guess, especially living up in the Niigata. And you got the prefecture, not a whole lot of English flying around. So I was in a total immersion situation. And, the first couple of months, you're just establishing yourself, trying to figure out what's going on. Anybody mm-hmm. who's moved to Japan from a foreign country, as I'm sure you have, the culture shock can be pretty severe at times, especially in the first couple of months. So it took me a little while to get situated, learn some survival Japanese. And while I was doing that, they had been set up in an apartment, and the apartment had one TV, which for the first couple of months I never turned on just because there's not a whole lot of English there, only yeah. three channels on Japanese all the time. So roll around about October, I had
October
established
2005, myself. Sorry, 2005.
October 05.
Okay, yeah. So that's a good year. Okay, anyways.
Yeah, it's a good year. Well, it gets better. I figured I had just about enough Japanese, September, October, I guess it was. I had just about enough Japanese to try to, turn on the TV, see what I could understand, kind of used it as a learning tool. So I took the remote in my hand, I pushed the button, turned it on, and at that moment, Abe of the Giants clubbed that fly ball out into left field, and it was caught by Kanemoto, and the Hanshin Tigers won the pennant in 2005. Like that exact second, the first time I turned on the TV. So of course I say, well, this is destiny.
Yeah.
And so from halfway across the country, just by virtue of having turned on the TV at the right place at the right time, I became a Hanshin Tigers fan.
That is pretty amazing.
That's a true story.
That's cool. So, I mean, you got introduced to the Giants and Tigers rivalry in a sense, and you also got introduced to Kanemoto right away. And that kind of leads us into my next question, which was, who is your favorite all-time Hanshin Tigers player?
Well, Kanemoto is an easy answer just because he was, I mean, obviously my first exposure to the Tigers was in catching that fly ball and charging into the infield. Uh-huh. But, I mean, to get back into that, I mean, we could go back into, I was on a working holiday visa at that point, so I could only stay a year. So that's not even a full baseball season. Right. I had to leave in July of 06, just as, you know, the baseball season was right, like all-star break, I guess. Mm-hmm. So I went back, I've completed my degree. I was on a working holiday visa on a year off from university, finished up what I was studying, knew that I wanted to go back. And so, I applied to the JET program. The JET program is a very long, complicated interview process. And in one of the interviews, I actually mentioned to the interviewing panel, which was composed of a foreign ex-JET and a Japanese person who, for the entire interview, sat quietly, just scrolling on a notepad. Uh-huh. But at one point, I got asked the question, "Well, what do you have any hobbies in Japan?" And I said, "Yeah, baseball. I'm a Hanshin Tigers fan." And the guy like looks up at me, like stares at me, big smile on his face. So I think that clicked in his head because when I finally got my placement on JET, you don't decide where you get to go, so they just place you anywhere in the country. So I got, as the crow flies, the closest possible placement to Koshien that there was. And I honestly think it was that dude who heard me say that I was a Tigers fan and looked up with a big grin on his face, and he did me a solid.
Yeah, why not? Yeah.
There you go.
That's awesome, man. I mean, that's a great placement. I didn't know anything about Japanese baseball when I came on JET, and I was placed in Okinawa, so I didn't
follow there you go.
For years and years.
Spring camp.
spring training, but, you know, at the time, I wasn't super interested in the NPB, so I never went to any of the spring training,
that's
unfortunately.
It. But, so that would have been late 08 that I arrived on JET for the first time, which, contrary to 2005, was not a great year for the Tigers. Because
particularly the end.
Yeah, 15-game lead on top of the Central League to the Giants on the last day of the season. So kind of had my love of the Tigers burnt into me through adversity, which is the only way to really do it properly.
Sure.
But anyway, so start the next year. It would have been the home opener of 2009, mm-hmm. Which I decided not to go to because I'm an idiot. And I was sitting at my house watching on the TV, and it was against the Carp. And I'll never forget this. And the Tigers had fallen behind, I think, about 7-2 in the bottom of the eighth inning. And they mounted this incredible comeback over the last two innings. And it was culminated by a runners on the corners double by Kanemoto, who scored Toritani all the way around from first. And the 8-7 win, the whole stadium, of course, goes insane. I charge out to participate in the big party afterwards.
Nice.
And I think that double down the first baseline was really like, oh, this Kanemoto guy, he's like 44 years old. He swings like he's trying to kill a rhinoceros every time he swings the bat. I love this guy. And the beginning of that season, 2009, I think the first 2 months of the season, he went on like this historic tear. He slugged 1,000 for like 2 months.
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I think he hit like three homer games in a week in the first couple weeks of the season. Like he just
You're
went
right.
completely ballistic. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, at that point I was moonstruck. And even though he kind of declined after that, you know, his age finally caught up to him and eventually he retired after breaking the streak. But, you know, it was tough for me to get off of that high. So all the jerseys I own, Kanemoto jerseys, he's my guy.
Yeah.
Good
totally
to see behind the bench.
So you must be pretty happy that he's on as manager, or is that something that you have kind of ambivalent feelings about?
I mean, it's good to see him there. I've long been of the opinion that Hanshin needs to get away from the OB network as far as coaches go to kind of progress. They've kind of run that well dry, I think, and it's time for a little bit of new blood. But if they're going to close it out with a guy, I think Kanemoto's the guy. I've always thought of him as managerial material, along with Yano, who's back there as well. Mm-hmm. So it's good to see in a way, but also I think it's kind of it's emblematic of the mentality that's holding the team back in a way as well.
Sure. Sure. I mean, I think that a lot of teams fall into this trap in NPB. And obviously the Giants are the biggest ones there because I don't think they've ever had a manager outside of their organization. But they also have the success.
Well, I mean, that's an Arihara. It was a manager for what, like 100 million years or something. So
yeah, exactly. So anyways, who is your current favorite Hanshin Tiger?
I'm a big fan of Fujinami. I still believe he's still so young that he's going to finally put it all together, be the ace we thought we were getting when we drafted him. I mean, he's still had some fun. When he's on, he's the best pitcher in Japanese baseball, not named Ohtani. He's unhittable. Mm-hmm. It's just, it feels like it's less and less often that he's actually on his game, but the potential is there. And good young pitching is all about potential.
Yeah.
He's got talent that you can't teach. You can learn to fix yourself as a pitcher. You can't learn the talent. So he's still raw. He's still very young. But if he can figure it all out, watch out. He's got like league dominating, make the jump to Major League Baseball potential, which is pretty rare coming in from Japan.
Sure. You know, even in the midst of his mediocre season last year, he had a one-hitter against the Eagles in late May, I think it was, early June. And then later in the season, he kind of almost duplicated that. So he had a couple of real gems of outings where literally, he was pretty much unhittable.
Yeah, the second, I think it was a two-hitter. I was at that game, actually, last year.
Oh.
It was great to see.
Yeah, so you're right about him having that potential for sure. But we will get into Fujinami a little bit later on. I was actually at his most recent outing, and let me tell you, it was not a
one-hitter
by any means. No, for sure.
Well, it almost was. It was a six-walker, though? So.
Eight, yeah.
Eight, there you go.
Yes, yes. So, Eric, tell us a little bit. You said that you were kind of part of the Oendan, or you were a big helper. You're largely involved in that side of things.
Never in a official capacity.
Right.
I'm sure you've been to Koshien, and your listeners have been to Koshien several times, but just to elaborate for anybody who hasn't been, there's the official Oendan who kind of wear the uniforms out in the right field, lead the chants.
Yeah,
I never broke into that world, mostly because my professional commitments wouldn't permit me to. There's a lot of travel involved with that if you want to do it really properly. And even then, you have to attend every game and pay for it. They pay for their own tickets. Wow. So from a financial standpoint, from a time standpoint, I just couldn't make the commitment. But what I was allowed to do eventually was after the game, behind every Tigers win, underneath the highway just outside of Goshen, is held what's called the ON Nijikai, or second party, where a lot of the Oendan members and a lot of the fans at large would just go out there and do the ON, the chants for players who'd perform well, like the whole entire starting lineup of the game, and then players who perform well that game, and then past players from old successful Hanshin teams.
Uh-huh. You get like your Randy Bass or your Kakefu or...
Yeah, I mean, esoteric guys as well. So I was eventually allowed to become the de facto leader of that particular tradition. So it involved a lot of memorizing chants of players that I'd never actually seen play before, but it would, a big foreign dude out there doing that. I think a lot of Japanese people, once they got past their initial confusion, it made them really happy to see like a dude who hadn't grown up with it kind of embracing the culture to that extent.
Sure, yeah.
Which, I mean, it's true for a lot of things in Japan. Anytime they see that you're making an honest effort to integrate, it makes them really happy, and understandably so. So. Yeah. It was an honor to be allowed to do it.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Yeah, and you're right. I mean, the Japanese people really appreciate when people who are non-Japanese come in and make that attempt to, you know, become part of society or, love the things that Japanese people love. And, you know, what do people love more here than the Hanshin Tigers?
Not a lot.
No,
not
a lot. For sure. So on the topic of players' cheers or chants or whatever, do you have a favorite either current or past chant? Or is it, is it the Kanemoto one or
where the old coach before Kanemoto, Mr. Mayumi, I guess Wada was in the middle, gosh, but Mayumi's chant, the version of the Mickey Mouse part where the entire crowd runs back and forth between their seats and other seats, which is a lot of fun when you do it with 200 people underneath the highway, start running back and forth. So the Mayumi chant's definitely my favorite one. If you ever get a chance to look it up on YouTube, it's good for a giggle.
Well, I'll have to look it up. I have heard it because I've watched clips of games where, he was up at the plate, and so I have heard it, but I never actually saw the crowd or paid much attention to it. I will.
There's a dance component to it as well.
Nice. Well, that's something that kind of is absent from a lot of the Hanshin Tigers cheers, where if you go to a place like Lotte and they're jumping up and down the whole time, or Hiroshima where they're, standing up and down in
Up and down,
Nixon, but, up and down stuff. So,
yeah.
You know, on one hand, I can appreciate what the Carp and the Marines fans and all that do as far as their cheers go, standing up and down and dancing and stuff. But on the other hand, to me, it's kind of fun to just watch the game. I mean, it's great to cheer and to sing the songs and stuff, but I also like to take in the game. I don't know. Are you a big proponent of the movements during cheers, or do you like to kind of take in what's going on as well?
I kind of like being a part of something bigger, I guess. And I definitely understand where you're coming from. And I think that that sentiment gets echoed by a lot of North American sports fans when I kind of tell them about what it's like. Mm-hmm. But, you know, having watched a whole lot of European soccer, for example, I think that subculture, like the togetherness, mm-hmm. almost tribal, that has negative connotations. But like, that's kind of the idea, like the idea that you're part of something bigger and that everybody's contributing to make this like big, massive show of support. It's cool, and I enjoy being a part of it, and to whatever extent that means. Like, growing up in Canada, I didn't have a chance to participate in U.S. college sports fandom, which is its own whole animal out here, but
yeah,
I could have seen myself being a big participant in that, too, if I'd grown up in a culture that had it. So, yeah, personally speaking, I definitely enjoy it more when there's structure to it.
Gotcha.
But again, I can definitely appreciate where you're coming from. You just want to sit and enjoy the ball game, have your beer, and relax. But for me, I had more fun when I was an active participant rather than a passive observer, if that makes sense.
Right. Yeah, for sure. Well, Eric, we can talk on and on about your time with the team or whatever, but I want to get into a little bit of news and then get into the recap and all that kind of stuff. So let's Absolutely. Jump on ahead. Yeah. So first, in the news, I just read today that Cole Sheehan has revealed that they are going to be doing a big scoreboard makeover in the 2018 offseason. So I'm kind of interested to see what they're going to do with that. The current scoreboard was kind of left a little bit to be desired, eh?
Yeah, in a way. I mean, it's. I just hope they don't do too much with it. The scoreboard at Koshien is iconic, not just for the Tigers, but also as a result of being like the visual symbol of the high school championships that are held every year.
Sure.
I mean, it's the way it looks. It's almost like the frieze at Yankee Stadium, the little fence across the top, where it's the symbol of the mecca of baseball in the country. So,
right,
definitely appreciate that it needs a little bit of sprucing up. As long as they keep the sight lines and the visual aspect of it the same, so that it's still like immediately identifiable as Koshien, I think it's going to be good.
Yeah, exactly. Well, they put the current system in place in 1993 for one half of the board and 1997 for the other half. So it's been a good 20-25 years since they've done any major makeover. And again, like you said, I hope they keep the actual structure and the actual kind of appearance of it intact for sure. But also, having gone to the museum, the Koshien Museum, once again, just a couple of weeks ago, seeing the actual hand-painted names of the players that they used to plug into the scoreboard, I mean, that's just really cool. It would almost be fun for them to do some kind of throwback action as well with it. You know, like, as much as they want to spruce it up and make it 21st century, I hope that it doesn't take on a full 21st century flavor, because that's going to really clash with the classic look of, you know, Koshien Stadium, which is almost 100 years old.
No, absolutely. And I think that's a lot of Koshien's charm, and it's important they maintain that, I think. You know, the black dirt infield is something that the people always notice right away when they watch a game at Koshien for the first time. It's an old ballpark. It's one of the oldest ballparks still existing in the world. I think it's one of a handful where it still exists where Babe Ruth is at a home run. So it's important that they kind of keep that historic aspect of it. Personally, I like my ballparks older and elbowing up against the person next to me in the bleachers rather than having these like big recliners that you get at the modern stadiums. If I go to a ball game, I want to get to know my neighbor. So yeah. I think the Koshien kind of emblemizes that in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's definitely a balance to strike between embracing that like rickety old mentality and modernizing the stadium so that it at least competes with some of the other cathedrals that are being built both in Japan and overseas.
Sure. Yeah. All right. In other news, I was also reading today, Kanemoto had made comments that it's going to be really tricky for the team to plug Eric Campbell back into the lineup when he is available. And he, as from the last I heard, he may be starting a rehab assignment either today or tomorrow. But
he's coming back soon.
You know, he's a third baseman. Tory Tani's been hitting really well at third. He's been fielding all right. He's just the one error. So it may be tricky, you know. And at first base, you got Haraguchi.
You can't take him out.
No, no. I mean, his defense leaves something to be desired, but, you know, certainly it's going to be tricky. So, yeah, that bat is pretty valuable. The other thing I read is that Oyama, first-round pick from last year, is they're thinking about grooming him as a shortstop, which I found really interesting, and I kind of couldn't figure out what to make of that. I mean, again, it's just a rumor, but, you know, you think about where the holes are in the infield. If Hojo continues to develop, you know, Hojo and Oyama are the same age.
Yep. I mean, it's Hojo's had a rough go of it early in the season, the one outstanding game last week aside. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, you know, it's still a very young season and in what is a very young career. So hopefully they haven't given up on him less than what? A few games into his professional career and they're already grooming his replacement. So,
exactly.
I mean, I guess there's something to be said for competition internally, but at the same time.
Yeah, but the way I see it, like, I mean, if Toritani has got a couple of years left in him, you know, if Oyama becomes the full-time third baseman of the future and Hojo is the full-time shortstop of the future, you've got a pretty good left side of the infield there. So, you know, maybe they're just doing it just to see what this kid can do and just to keep him flexible, you know what I mean? So I hope that's all
Yeah, from a developmental standpoint, though, Hanshin's got a not so auspicious history of trying to convert guys into positions that they aren't necessarily well suited for.
Right.
That's not just recently, but also going back a ways as well. So,
sure.
You know, and a couple of times I'd like to see them build around guys at their natural position, rather to try to shoehorn them into where they think they're needed.
Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, what do I know, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're, you know, as fans, I've said this before on the show, but we're only privy to a certain amount of information and we don't get to
see all
the practices every day. So we can criticize all we want, but we don't see, you know, less than just a tiny, you know, pie slice of what's actually going on.
No, absolutely.
So, yeah. Other news, Yamato is eligible for free agency at season's end. And I know, you know, it was just a very quick question that was asked by the press, but he said, you know, I'll think it over. So, you know, so he's got to consider his options. And if he's not going to get a lot of playing time with the Tigers and if another team is going to offer it to him, you know, he may jump ship.
That's an interesting possibility. I always rated him. When he was breaking into the scene, he was playing as a backup for Akahoshi almost, where Akahoshi locked down that center field spot until he had to retire because of injury. And they saw Yamato as kind of like the heir apparent, both in spirit and positionally, just because he had that like base stealing speed that they were losing when Akahoshi went out. So it's interesting to see that he hasn't really had a chance to leverage that. Part of that's, you know, you can't really steal first base, and he hasn't had a ton of success getting on.
Yes, indeed.
But, you know, I think we're going to talk later in the show about guys not getting the green light this year. So it would be interesting to see what he does on a team that kind of is a little bit more aggressive on the base pass, because he still has the speed to do it.
Yeah, he hasn't had a chance to showcase it by any means, that's for sure. All right, last piece of news is actually not news, and that is that I've been scouring, you know, the websites and the headlines and all that stuff. I've not seen any real news on Eric Campbell, and certainly Tsuyoshi Nishioka, and the one that really concerns me is Shintaro Yokota. For those of you not familiar, he went down with migraines in the middle of February. He left the Okinawa spring training camp, came back up to Osaka, and there has not been a word in the press for 2 months about him. So you kind of have to wonder, I mean, like, if he's showing up at practice, surely the press is going to be on that. I mean, this is the Hanshin Tigers media. They cover everything, you know, when Kanemoto sneezes, it makes the headlines. So I'm a little bit worried about Yokota.
Hope he's all right. I mean, you never want to see an injury. Like, anytime the head's involved, it gets a little bit scary.
Yeah.
So, thoughts out to him.
Yeah, for sure. Let's just hope that things go better for him.
Absolutely.
Let's jump into recaps now. And so we're going back to the start of this week, or rather last week, I suppose, when we played three at Kyocera Dome against the Swallows, and then we followed that up with what was supposed to be three at Koshien against the Giants, turned out to be two games. So let's jump back to April the 4th. This was Tuesday of last week, and I was actually in attendance at the game, and what a game it was. So Shintaro Fujinami was on the mound for us, and so-and-so Buchanan, I forget his first name, was on the mound for Yakult Swallows, making his debut for the team. Well, the scoring in this one goes first inning with runners on first and second and two outs. Yuhei hits a kind of a blooper to left field and scores a run, so it's 1-0 for the Swallows. A couple of innings later, Vladimir Ballantyn, he smoked a 1-0 offering to the upper deck of the center field stands. In fact, it was the longest hit home run in NPB the entire week. So fortunately, really? It was a solo shot. Yeah, it was. I think it was 458 feet or something crazy like that.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Ballantyn hits like a truck, though, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. He's incredible. So 2-0 for the Swallows after the top of the third. And we're going to skip over the big fifth inning where there was no scoring, but there was another event. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. But tell us what happened in the sixth inning, Eric.
Yeah, onto the bottom of the sixth with one out. Hanshin's new toy, Yoshio Itoi, takes him over the wall in right field for a solo home run, cuts the deficit to 1.
Yes, and that was his second home run in 2 games, so pretty good. Mm-hmm. It's looking all right, except that we could not capitalize and bring this one to a tie. And so in the top of the ninth inning, we've got our relievers in. And there was a ground out to first base, but the runner from third base, Araki, for the Swallows came in. So it was 3-1 for Yakult, and that's the way this one ends. 3-1 loss. Hanshin had a chance in the bottom of the ninth with two runners on and Kano up, but he grounded out and game over. So we lose our home opener 2017.
Quote unquote home opener. Right. But
Yeah. So Kyoseta only holds about 35, 36,000 people, whereas Koshien is closer to 50,000. And, did you go to any games at Kyoseta?
I did go to a couple. It's not the same thing.
No, it
really
isn't.
I've never been a fan of domes in general, and that goes back to my days in Montreal playing in the worst dome in the history of Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's just a personal thing, but I'll take an open-air stadium and the ambiance there anytime.
For sure, me too. Well, you know, for me, the Kyoseta Dome games are kind of a necessary evil, and so I go to them when I really need my Tigers fix, but I try to avoid them. I try to avoid the Dome. I try to go to Koshien as much as possible. So,
of course.
Yeah. Anyways, let's talk a little bit more in detail about this game. First of all, we mentioned this a little bit in the intro that Fujinami had 8 walks on the day. And by the way, he only lasted 5 innings. So I think it was after 4 1/3 innings, he walked his 8th guy. And right after that walk with a guy on first base, he lost control. Not that he ever had it. And he hit Hatakeyama, their first baseman. It looked like it hit him right in the face. But in fact, if you slow down the replay, it glanced off his shoulder. It glanced off of his ear flap. And then it hit him in the face. Still plenty painful. You know, it knocked him down. But he got up. You know, he wasn't bleeding or anything like that. And he had a few words with Fujinami. And a brawl resulted in it. So did you catch the highlights of the replays of this, Eric?
I did, yeah. It, I mean, from the look of things, the biggest implicated Tiger and the one who got the fine in the end was actually not a player, but the coach.
Yeah.
Old Akihiro Yano, catching fame, Moko no Kaname, the cornerstone of the Tigers. So it's, I was surprised to see that. I remember Yano from his playing days. He always seemed like a pretty chill dude. So it was interesting to see him going after Ballantyn with quite that much aggression.
Yeah. But, well, the way it went down, in fact, was that he didn't go after Ballantyn first. I mean, he was kind of in the scrum. There was a bit of a scrum, and Yano really wasn't doing anything in particular, and Ballantyn came and kind of threw him out of the crowd. I mean, he's kind of like grabbed him. Yano's not a very big guy, and Ballantyn is, and so Yano fell to the ground, to the turf or whatever. He got up and chased after Ballantyn, who had since, you know, moved down the row a little bit. And it looked like he tried like a flying drop kick or what the headlines here said was flying knee. So I was like, I don't know what Yano was doing, but it looked hilarious. He missed, obviously. And
luckily.
Yeah. And Ballantyn knocked him down again. But in the midst of this too, Kanemoto looked like he wanted to tear Ballantyn's head off as well. But he never actually...
Kanemoto, I can believe it though. He always had a temper on him, even back to his playing days. But yeah, to see Yano, I guess he, you know, ultimately he wasn't the initial aggressor, but to see him kind of blow his top like that was a bit out of character for him. So I was surprised there.
Yeah. Well, the long and the short of it is that Ballantyn and Yano both got kicked out. Fujinami was allowed to continue to pitch. And so Yakult manager Manaka was very upset about this. He sent out a report to the league commissioner or league front office complaining about why Fujinami was not ejected. Why would you want a guy that's giving you free bases all night ejected anyways?
I don't know. Well, I can understand his viewpoint, right? And in Japanese baseball, anything that goes to the head is automatic, as I understand it.
Yes,
Kenkyu,
right.
A dangerous pitch.
Yeah.
So, you know, on the one hand, he has to do it just for appearances' sake, for propriety's sake, because ultimately, Fujinami probably should have gotten run. But, I mean, as you say, first of all, it was probably in Yakult's best interest to keep on the mound anyway, just because he couldn't find the strike zone all night. And second of all, it clearly wasn't an intentional beanball with a guy on first. And, he had control of issues. This one got away from him.
Yeah.
I don't think he meant to hit Takayama. It was just a mistake pitch that ended badly. Probably should have resulted in an injection for a dangerous pitch to the head. But again, nothing malicious there.
So ultimately, Fujinami ended up finishing out the inning. He got a ground out and then a double play. Now, he had 101 pitches heading into the fifth inning. He ended up with 117, and that was the end of his night. Interestingly, though, this is a kid that, is a strikeout pitcher. I mean, that's just his game. He got none. His successor on the mound, Ryoma Matsuda, struck out the side in the sixth, got one more in the seventh, and then the next guy on the mound was Kyuji in the eighth, and he struck out the side as well. So we got 7 strikeouts in the next 3 innings after Fujinami stepped down.
I mean, there's a psychological standpoint to that as well. Adrenaline gets high. Guys are trying to swing through their shoes, hit a home run, show everybody what's up.
Mm-hmm.
So, I've seen that before in Major League Baseball as well, and also back with the Tigers. You know, the big home run is the best revenge tool that you can have. So,
right.
Guys are swinging for power as opposed to for contact. You start missing a lot more.
Yeah,
I expect that has something to do with it. But, to Fujinami, to see him come out of the game with no strikeouts, always surprising. But in this case, you have to and he wasn't anywhere near the zone for most of the evening.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, what I've noticed in his bad outings lately is that when he misses the strike zone, he misses by a lot. And when he puts pitches in the strike zone, they're usually not on the corners.
They're not where you want them to be.
Right. And so, when you think about it in those terms, despite the fact that he was so errant and the fact that he was actually not like he was right in the heart of the strike zone when he did pitch strikes, the fact that he only ended up giving up the one run, or pardon me, 2 runs, is pretty impressive. like you said, it does show that he's got good stuff, that even when his stuff looks hittable, guys are usually not getting much on.
I wouldn't look too much into that statistic personally. The strand rate, I believe, is what the fancy stats guys call it, the ability to get guys on base and then pitch out of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a sustainable ability, I think is the way they refer to it. So,
rather
be lucky than good in a lot of cases.
On one hand, I would say that, but then on the other hand, if the reason that the guys are on base in the first place is not because of their bats, but because of their eyes, then, the strand rate, I'm not saying that it's fully sustainable, but it's not like they were getting on with hits and then they weren't able to hit their way back home. They were getting on with free passes, and so they weren't really connecting on his stuff very well the whole night.
We all know when Fujinami's on his game, he's unhittable. The stuff is there. It's just a matter of locating it properly. But for this kid, it's important to remember that he's still 22 years old, which is the age that most big league pitchers would be when they first break into the league and doesn't like a long relief role, not even as a starter.
Yeah.
So he's having a lot of high leverage innings placed on him at a very, very young age when he's still figuring things out.
Yes.
So, performances right now I wouldn't read too deeply into. In so much as they hurt the Tigers, absolutely. But this is a long investment, I think, for when the Tigers are actually competitive a few years from now. And Fujinami's got a whole lot of experience under his belt.
Right. Gotcha. Well, speaking of Fujinami and Fujinami being only 22 years old, tomorrow is his birthday.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it sure is. Why am I in February? April the 12th. Born in 1994. How does that for making you feel old?
Oh, dear.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to the next game of the series. And once again, everybody, you can hear my beautiful baby boy in the background crying probably. This is life in the T-Ray home. So let's go to Wednesday. And we are, of course, back at Kyocera Dome. We are putting Takumi Akiyama on the mound. And they put Hirofumi Yamanaka on the mound. This is a submarine thrower that we have had issues with, since a couple or 3 years ago. We just cannot hit this guy. But first inning, Eric, go ahead.
Yeah, no problem getting to him out of the gate today. Hanshin loads up the bases with nobody out off the back of a Takayama hit, an Uemoto hit, and then an Itoi walk. Fortunately, isn't able to capitalize very much on that. Fukudome grounds into his double play, which scores one, and then
that's it.
Colt escapes the inning without further incident.
Yeah, yeah, lucky them. So Ballantyne gets
that about
the run back in the Ballantyne gets the run back in the top of the fourth. This was with a hit to center field. It was right back up the middle, and that was the runner on second. So tie 1-1 in the fourth inning.
Yep, on to the lucky seventh inning, bottom of the seventh, with Umino and Uemoto aboard. Your boy Yoshio Itoi again, three-run home run, this time to right field, marking, I believe, his third straight game with a home run at that point.
That is right, yep. So that came off of the relievers, I believe. I don't think Yamanaka was still in the game at that point. I could be wrong.
I believe that's correct, yeah.
Yeah. It was off Josh Lukey, that's right. our everybody's favorite therapist. So Luke takes the loss. And Kuwahara gets the win for us. It was his first win in, I think they said seven. Was it? It couldn't have been seven seasons. And his first win in forever. But, you know, he just happened to be the reliever on the mound in the top of the seventh. So there you have it. Tigers win 4-1.
Right place, right time.
Yeah, right place, right time. Yeah, exactly. So any thoughts on this game?
I mean, Itoi is obviously the man of the hour at this point, three straight games with a home run, and the offense would continue. But, you know, anytime that you're able to hit a big home run, the seventh inning has historically been good to the Tigers, lucky seventh. So credit also to the guys getting on ahead of him. Takayama and Uemoto both had great games, Uemoto especially.
Yeah.
Able to keep innings alive, move runners over, score a run himself off of Itoi's home run. So I think as far as underrated performances in this game go, I'm a big fan of his today.
Sure, sure. That, and then also, I want to give props to Akiyama, who made his 2017 debut. Six innings pitched. He went into the seventh and got allowed a couple guys on base. But he only allowed the one run. Struck out five and walked only two, which is amazing for Hanshin pitchers this year so far.
Yeah, you want to talk about young kids, he's still, it's important to remember that he feels like he's been around forever, but he came out of high school.
Yeah,
so made his first start when he made his first start when he was like 18, 19, so still a ways to go for him, and it's good to get, you know, a back of the rotation starter like that. When he puts up a quality start like this, it's it always picks the team up.
Absolutely, yeah, and especially in light of how the starters have been doing lately. In fact, his start to date, you know, after eight games of the season, his start is the best as far as the numbers go, with six innings pitched and one earned run.
There you go.
The only other starter to go six innings is going to come later in our recap with Nomi, but he ended up allowing three runs, but we'll get to that in a little bit.
Not so young there.
No, definitely not. A little bit long in the teeth. So Dolis picks up the save in this one, and you know, we end our three-game losing streak, which is nice. And let's go. Let's start a winning streak. Let's go into Thursday. Randy Messenger starting on a little bit of short rest, at least for NPB, by NPB standards. And they're going with Shohei Tateyama, you know, and speaking of old. So let's go through the scoring. Tateyama did not have a good start to this.
No.
Did he, Eric?
For Hanshin in the bottom of the first on this one. Takayama Uemoto get on board again to lead off the game. This time, Itoi, as opposed to walking, punches an RBI single out to right. Fukudome walk loads up the bases again. Then Haraguchi gets an RBI. Toritani hits an RBI. Hojo hits a sack fly. And then another run comes in on an Umino ground out, bringing us to, what is that,
4-0.
In the first inning? 4-0 in the first inning.
Yeah, in fact, I mean, it was 3-0 before they even got an out.
Yep.
Right? And so it was a Hojo out, then the Umino out, and then Messenger to end that.
Yeah,
so
we both of which scored runs.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, Hojo's didn't score a run. I think it might have advanced the runners, but... So in the top of the second, they got one run back, and that came on I forget the guy's name. I can't read the kanji. I'm terrible. But anyways, so with runners on second and third, or first and second, they got a base hit, and so it's 4-1 for them. And then in the sixth inning, Randy runs into trouble. And I think his night ended on an Obiki single. It was kind of a bloop single, so it ended up being 4-2 with runners on first and second. But our relievers could not hold the lead, and so it ended up being 4-4 because Yamada hit a double to, I think it was a double to shallow left, if I'm not mistaken. Left center.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, left center, if I got it right. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So tie game 4-4. So Randy is not in line for the win. And this one actually went a long time before it was settled.
Bottom of the 11th. Mm-hmm. The golden rookie Haraguchi out to left field for the sayonara home run. And this might be my favorite highlight of the young season.
Yeah.
Because he did not leave the batter's box until the ball cleared the wall. He just watched it go the entire way, which yeah. in the big leagues would get you one in the ribs the next time you face this team.
Yeah.
But in Japan, you get a little bit more leeway, and it was pretty obvious that he was pretty pumped to hit this. And the replay, the look on his face is fantastic.
Absolutely. Yeah, and, you know, I talked a little bit about this on one of the Facebook chat pages, you know, the difference between MLB and NPB as far as celebrating home runs or watching your home runs, stuff like that, because Itoi kind of did the same thing the day before with his three-run shot in the bottom of the seventh. Yep. And, you know, somebody said, like, I'm tired of seeing these guys showing up pitchers. And I was like, well, I don't really think they're showing up pitchers. I mean, I just don't think that's the heart behind what they're doing. And especially Haraguchi's, you know, like we're talking about a kid that until, you know, even less than a year ago, even a year ago today, yep. he was still Ikuse, you know, which means that he was unable to be called up to the big team at all.
Correct.
So he's just come a long way. I mean, it's been a long road back for him from a lot of injuries and a lot of hardship yep. and almost
out of essentially nowhere.
Yeah, really. So, and again, you know, he didn't even look at the pitcher once. He was watching that ball and he was just so excited to have been able to hit it. And, you know, he jumped into kind of with those arms after he crossed home plate. And a big win to end this series, 2-1 for Hanshin.
Extremely important win. Yakult this year, for all that they have, probably the best hitter, or the best power hitter, I suppose, in the league. Not a super strong team. Probably going to finish in the lower half of the standings. So this is a series, so. Especially after a bit of a cold start that Hanshin absolutely had to have. And they brought it late, took it down to the wire, and even a little bit past it. But that home run is going to give them a lot to build off of going into the next part of the season, I think.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I mean, just to know that the big bats are able to come out and make the difference in the games, and we're going to see this a little bit later in the recaps, that, you know, the long ball is actually a part of the Tigers' offense this year, at least so far, you know, and hopefully...
Yeah, it's always completely changed the complexion of the lineup. Completely.
Yeah, totally agree with that. And, you know, like at the start of the year, I was saying I'd love to see him batting leadoff, but him in the three slot has been a pretty good decision and has worked out really well for the team.
So. Yeah, and they're playing him that way. I mean, we'll probably talk about it later how he's leaning a little bit more on his power and a lot less on his speed. But I mean, his home runs were all pretty much no doubt abouters, and Haraguchi's he hit that ball a lot. That ball was a no doubter from the minute it left his bat, and obviously he knew it because he didn't take a step.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's easy to hit home runs at Kyosei Arena. The porches are shorter. The walls are higher to compensate, but it's the hitter friendly park as compared to Koshien, which can be pretty cavernous at times. But those Absolutely. Were gone in any ballpark.
Yeah,
this side of the ocean or either one. So it's good to see the big bats kind of hit with authority in a way that's sustainable across, you know, any part
yeah,
they're playing.
Playable in any field, yeah. And for Haraguchi, so that was his first home run of the season. Hopefully, the first of many. Completes the. You know, home runs for each of our cleanup hitters, so to speak. You know, number 3 Itoi has got 3 home runs. Our number 4 hitter Fukudome hit one in the season opener, and now Haraguchi has got his. So that's a good sign as well, you know, that the power bats have actually got home runs already. So let's jump into the Koshien official home opener. And this is the one I actually wanted to go to. This was Friday night, April the 7th. And we are facing the Kyojin, the Yomiuri Giants. And, you know, who wouldn't want to go to one of these games? But unfortunately, it sold out so fast, I had no chance of getting tickets.
Minutes those tickets go. And the fact that it was like the real home opener doesn't help, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly. So they bring Miles Michaelis to the mound, and we have got Yuta Iwasada. Iwasada struggled in his first outing of the year. That was against the Carp. But we're hoping maybe against a little bit of a softer hitting Giants team, he can get the job done a little bit better. No guy, not the case. So
negative.
Casey McGee, negatory. Bases loaded, one out, and he hits an RBI. I guess it ended up being an RBI single, and we'll talk a bit about the nature of this later. But 1-0 for the Giants here, and then just a little bit later, Okamoto, who's one of their young future potential sluggers, again with the bases loaded, two outs.
Where do they keep finding these guys?
I don't know. I think he was their first round draft pick in 2014, though.
I swear every time.
Anyway, so he hits one through the left side of the infield. It was a soft grounder, but it was, you know, it was enough to get through, and they got two more guys home, so 3-0 for them after one inning. The very next inning, this was, I think it was the leadoff guy, if I'm not mistaken, and this is a guy that had not hit a home run in 7 years. Well, when I say that in that tense, that means that he did hit one here. It was Nakai that hit one over the left field wall. So 4-0 for Kyojin, for the bad guys. Terrible start to this one for us and for Iwasada as well. But let's go for a little bit of comeback action.
A little bit of comeback action. Bottom of the fifth, fast forward. So Hanshin playing from behind for a fair stretch of this.
Yep.
Finally gets a little bit of light in the fifth inning when Nakatani grounds into a double play with runners on the corners, but scores Hojo from third.
Yes.
Cutting the deficit 4-1. Fast forward another inning to the sixth, and Fukudome again with nobody out and men on the corners hits a clean single. And this was interesting. He was hitting from the left side of the plate, but he actually went opposite fly. A little flare down the left field line. Looked to me like the rain that was falling caused the fielder to lose it in the lights or distracted him. It was a catchable ball, and he just didn't get to it.
Yeah.
Either way, it's an RBI single. It cuts the deficit, brings in two guys. Or sorry, brings in one guy, cuts the deficit to 4-2. And then from there, a Michaelis wild pitch scores another run. That's just a 4-3.
Yes.
Unfortunately,
that's the end of the road.
That's as close as they got.
Yeah, so in the top of the seventh, they bring in pinch hitter Kamei, and with one out and a runner on third, he hits a sac fly to right field, 5-3, and that's how this one ends. So we lose our home opener. The losing pitcher is Iwasada. The winning pitcher is Michaelis. And any thoughts on this game or anything you want to talk about? I want to talk about the very first RBI of the game, and that was to Casey McGee. He hit one to left center. And it looked like, once again, it might have been the rain. It might have been unfamiliarity of Itoi and Takayama with each other. But it looks like either of them could have had it, and neither of them got it. And so,
yeah, I think the winds were blowing. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, fortunately, you know, even with the bases loaded, I think all the guys on base were anticipating that it would be caught. And so they only got one run, even though it was a deep single.
Yeah, I think the wind's blowing in a weird way in the outfield in this game, looking back at the highlights and watching what I watched. Koshien typically has a pretty strong wing out from left, down off the mountains and out into the ocean, but I think this one was blown crosswise, out across the outfield to right field, and that throws a lot of guys off when it does happen. It's pretty rare, but with the weather, I think that was what was going on. Mm-hmm. So a lot of misjudged balls led to runs both ways.
Yeah.
But it's always interesting to see.
Yeah, sure. So that was... That, again, though, I think to me just kind of highlighted that Takayama really needs more experience in the field. And maybe he needs to focus a little bit on that as well, because that's a part of his game that is going to take him out of the lineup more than anything else, especially late in games.
Absolutely, yeah. But he's performed well enough as a leadoff hitter. I mean, the average isn't where you like it, but the OBP is slightly better. Mm-hmm. And this week especially, it felt like he was always setting the table for the power bats, especially in the Yakult series. Felt like he was always on base when Itoi was coming up. So that's where you want your guy to be.
Yeah, sure. Anything else strike you in this one?
I don't want to talk about a loss to Kyojin any more than necessary, so we can move on.
Okay. Well, the one thing that I'll say then is that that run in the fifth inning where Nakatani hit into a hit into a double play. That is the third time we've scored a run on a double play. I suppose on one hand it's better than last year where we would have bases loaded, no outs, and end up with nothing. But you definitely like to see them, at the very least, you know, hit a sac fly or, you know, like a regular ground out where it ends up scoring a run and only resulting in one out. But it is what it is.
That's it. Yeah, you got to get the ball into play. I mean, the worst outcome for any at bat is a strikeout.
Yeah.
So anytime you get the ball in play, you get a chance for your base runners or to do something or else the fielders to mess up, as we saw with McGee. Mm-hmm. So, you know, get the barrel on it and see what happens, I guess. So, yeah. But, you know, obviously a double play is not where you want to go.
Right.
But as long as we're putting runs across, I think the outcome could be worse.
Sure. One more thing to point out, and that is that Iwasada, despite only going five innings, he struck out nine guys. So, you know, it looks like he's found at least his stuff where he definitely induced a lot of whiffs, because I think only two if I'm looking at this correctly, two of them were strikeouts looking. All the others were strikeouts swinging. So, you know, he caused a lot of batters to miss balls. And that's
good. I did notice that. I was going to bring it up later. But again, the weather, I think, played a factor in that. There was a lot of missing going on both sides of the plate. Mm-hmm. It can be tough to hit a ball. There was a lot of rain falling that night. So that can affect the hitter's concentration as well.
Right. Not enough rain to call the game, mind you, which is what happened on Saturday. So we lost that one partway through the third inning. And so we're going to jump right into Sunday's action. Since we don't want to talk about losses, let's talk about a win. So Sunday, we brought Nomi to the mound and they brought Otake to the mound. And you can take away the scoring from the start here if you'd like.
Yeah, fast forward to the bottom of the second after a scoreless first. And Fumiya Hojo with two outs punches one over the wall to left center field. And when I say punches, I mean it. He hit this ball well. If you're going out of the yard at Koshien to center field, you have hit a bomb. And it's good to see Hojo get off the schneid a little bit. He hadn't been hitting very well. And we know the power's there as far as shortstops go anyway. So it's good to see him catch a hold of one and bring it over to wall. And we'd get more of that later on.
Yeah, we'll get to that in just a second. But the top of the seventh, it took all the way to the seventh for the Giants to mount any sort of comeback. And this came right at the end of Nomi's outing. So with no outs and runners on first and third, Abe, I hate that guy.
Anyways,
he brought in a run on a, you know, just a soft single to right field. And then Kame, a couple of batters later, I think it was, with runners on first and second, he smoked the first fastball that he saw to right field and brought in two runs. So 3-1 for the Giants.
Wouldn't last, though, because onto the bottom of the seventh, the lucky seven strikes again, and it's Hojo one more time.
Yes.
This time he snuck it around the foul pole in left field with Toritani on first for another home run, a two-run shot this time to tie the game, 3-3, and he was pumped. Yes. Coming around the bases. He was so into it, which is great to see. I mean, obviously, this is a young kid who, again, had been struggling up to this point in the year, and I think he sees this as kind of his breakout moment. Mm-hmm. And it's tough to have a bigger one, the opening season and series of the season at Koshien against the Giants to tie the game in the seventh inning. Like, that's a moment.
It doesn't get bigger than that, really. Yeah. So he was kind of yelling at the ball, I guess, you know, as it was going. He's like, get out of there. And so, it did.
The old Johnny Bench wave it fair move there.
Yeah. Nice. Well, take it a step further, Eric. What happened after that?
Yeah, so tie game, Kyojin puts up nothing, and then in the bottom of the eighth, the lethal Uepon, Hiroki Uemoto, takes a 1-1 pinch out into left field, straight into the Kyojin away fans cheering section.
In your face.
In your face. I love putting it right down their throats like that. 4-3 lead. That's how it ends.
Yes. Dolis comes in for the save, his second of the year, and... So there you have it, folks. We split the series with Kyojin. To me, the good news is it didn't take till September for us to beat them at Koshien like last year. And that was just hard to watch last season, let me tell you. I was at two of those games, two of the losses against Kyojin last year at Koshien.
Yeah.
Nothing is harder than leaving the stadium after a Kyojin loss. But
I know that feeling well.
I bet. Well, nicely done by our mid infielders. And again, we talked about the cleanup hitters getting their home runs and, you know, the clutch home runs, the game winning bomb by Itoi on Wednesday, by Haraguchi on Thursday. And then again, today on Sunday, I should say, you know, Hojo was two and then Uemoto, you know, kind of the one of the least likely guys to do it with the game winner.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Uemoto's always had a bit of pop in his bat. The first exposure I had to him was actually watching a game at Naruohama, which is the Tigers' minor league facility. Mm-hmm. I think it was against the minor league Carp, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. It could be. Anyway, they went into the bottom of the ninth inning tied, and he hit a bomb straight away center field. This thing was hit a lot. So I kind of took his name down. This would have been, 2010. Before he broke into the big team. And I kind of made a note of his name. So he's not really known for his power, but it is definitely there.
Sure.
And the good moment to flash it.
Yeah. You know, for a kid of his stature, you know, certainly you don't expect the power, but it is there. I think in 2014, he hit 7 home runs, which on a Tigers team playing at Koshien is not a bad number at all.
Nope, especially out of a middle infielder like that.
Yeah. So a couple of things to note. Hojo, for him, that was his first home run at Koshien as a pro. It was his first home run at Koshien since he was a high schooler. So nice to be able to see him go yard with the pinstripes on and doing it twice.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Doing it twice.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to note was on Abe's, that opening single, man, it was just a good piece of hitting. I mean, there's nothing you can't fault Nomi. He threw it low and outside. It was almost in the dirt. And Abe just did what Abe has been doing, you know, since the Stone Ages, where he just got his bat on the ball. He didn't even fully swing at it. He just literally, his bat stopped as soon as it made contact with the ball. There was no follow through. And it just managed to carry itself over the infield. So, you know, and that was the only RBI hit that Nomi gave up. So the other two runs that went on his plate came off of the Kamei hit, which was from, I think Kuwahara was in the game for that one. So Nomi really pitched, you know, amazingly well.
Yeah, throwback game. But yeah, Abe's made a career out of doing that. I mean, obviously the power's there.
Yeah,
he hits a lot for a catcher. No, I mean, ultimately he's at his best when he's just poking balls out over the infield like that.
Yeah.
It was very Abe-rashi, if you'll permit me the Japanese. So no, it was...
Yeah,
no, I hate that guy, but I respect him.
Yeah, you got to respect him as much as, you know, even though earlier I said I hate him, you know, I really respect his batting ability. I mean, he's a tough out. He just is. I mean,
he's always been a tough out, and he has murdered the Tigers over the years.
He has, and he'll murder the ball, you know, if he gets the pitch in the zone. And so if you pitch him in the zone, he's going to smoke it. If you pitch out of the zone, he's going to poke it. So, you know, tough out. But Nomi did a pretty good job on him most of the game. So just that one little hit, and that's that.
Yeah, he didn't know where that was going. That could have gone anywhere.
Yeah.
The batting average on balls in play, right? It could have wound up anywhere, and he just happened to dump it in the right place.
Well, good for him, I guess, but better for the Tigers that we ended up winning the game. So we ended up going 3-2 on the week, which is not bad. I had predicted a 4-2 week at the start of the week. I mean, nobody predicts rainouts, and so I was pretty close. If we had won that Saturday game, I would have been perfect because I said 2 against each. But that is that. Let us talk about Player of the Week.
This is your week. You are number one.
And this is a week that, again, you know, our bats came out to play. We got a lot of long ball action. We had a couple of good pitching outings. But who you got for us, Eric?
I actually thought about this for a while. My dark horse candidate was Toritani, who hit 421 for the week. Mm-hmm. Gucci, obviously, with the sayonara home run, is a big candidate, but ultimately it's got to be Yoshio Itoi, right?
Okay.
A whole lot of home runs. He slugged over 800, OPS up over 1250 for the week, which is enormous. Bunch of home runs, bunch of RBIs, a lot of runs scored. He was getting on a lot as well. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the home runs helped with that, but he was setting the table. And most interestingly to me, which we'll probably touch on later, is the zero stolen bases, which
is
kind of incongruous considering what was expected of him when he was signed. But as long as he keeps hitting the ball over the wall, I can't really complain too much.
Sure. Yeah, good choice. I picked him last week, and so for that reason, I'm not going to pick him this week. And it's not that he's not deserving, but I'm going to go with Uemoto. And you touched on this a lot during the recap, but you know he was setting the table really well. He hit .333 on the week. He had a double as well as that game-winning home run on Sunday. And also, something that we don't talk about a lot when we look at Player of the Week, he played solid defense. And this is a guy that is known for, you know, making some really bad mistakes in the field. He saved a couple of runs with some stellar defense. I mean, he's shown some pretty good range. And that's something that our infield has kind of lacked, especially with an aging Toritani playing wherever he ends up playing. And then Hojo is still not particularly outstanding on defense. So to have one of our infielders do a good job like that, I think it deserves some recognition. So I got Hiroki Uemoto for me.
Very reasonable choice. And I always like to see young players progress defensively. And I think a lot of that can be attributed to coaching. Kanemoto always struck me as kind of like a harsh taskmaster in the field. He kind of always had that like vibe to me when he was a player, and I imagine he's continuing that now. But you know, ultimately, if the results are there, we see progression for these young guys who might go from a little bit heavy-handed in the field to kind of making the plays that Uemoto made this week. Obviously, credit to him for improving himself, but also I think credit to the coaching staff as well.
Sure. Yep. I'm with you on that. Right. Well, let's look now at our hot topic of the week.
Hanshin Tigers English News. Hanshin Tigers English. Hanshin Tigers English
Hot Topics. I really want to talk just about the Tigers' season thus far. What have they been doing well? What have they not been doing well? What are some areas that we see a need for improvement? Who are some of the players that maybe might get some playing time in the starting lineup? now that the season's kind of settled in a little bit, which guys are going to be cemented in their place in the hitting order, and so on and so forth. So, first, let's talk about just your general impressions of the Hanshin Tigers season so far, Eric. You know, we're 4-4 on the year. We took 1 out of 3 from the Carp. Really should have had 1 out of 3. Sorry, we should have had 2 out of 3, and then we got 2 out of 3 from Yakult and 1 out of 2 from Kyojin. What are your impressions?
I mean, so far so good. Better than last year, which is all you can really ask for. I mean, I don't think they're going to contend for a pennant. I think they're probably going to make the Climax Series, which when that happens, anything can happen after that, as we all know. But I think offensively, like we touched on earlier, the acquisition of Itoi has completely changed this team. Mm-hmm. Just what he brings to this lineup that has existed there for a good long while. And I mean, the power is there, obviously, but one thing that surprised me, and we can talk about this a little bit if you'd like, this is a guy who stole 53 bases last year with Oryx, mm-hmm. which, I mean, obviously is a fantastic number. Thus far this year, he has none. And a lot of that comes from not being on base because he's just running around them all the time. But, I mean, a lack of stolen bases and aggressivity on the base paths has been a theme with the Tigers this year, I think. It's, yes. They're not running. And I don't know if the power, you know, we can't rely on Hiroki Uemoto and Fumio Hojo to hit home runs to bail us out of games every night.
No.
So I think this is a team that needs to be aggressive on the base pass, so they're going to have success. And to see guys getting the red light to the extent that they have is a little bit surprising to me.
Yes. Yeah. No, let me piggyback on that a little bit. So Itoi has gone 0-for-2 so far on the base pass. He has tried 2 stolen bases, been caught stealing both times. And our lone stolen base as a team, we got 1. That was by Shun Takayama, and I think it was a situation where there was a runner on third base, so he stole second, and it was kind of a free base.
But they're almost indifferent.
That might even be it. That might be our 3 stolen base attempts this year.
I think so. Yeah, and I mean, for all that he led the league, or the Pacific League, in stolen bases last year, he led the Pacific League in caught stealing as well, mm-hmm. did Itoi. And remember, he was playing on a terrible Buffalo's team who... he was basically the only offensive threat they had, whether with his bat or with his legs. So he needed to run a lot in order to get them anywhere. But, you know, he does have the speed. The ability is there.
Yeah.
And we talked about it with Yamato as well. You know, a guy like Takayama or Uemoto, these guys have a little bit of velocity. They can get a jump when they need to.
Yeah.
And the fact that they haven't been jumping speaks to me that the coaching staff is choosing to rely more on the power play.
Yeah. Toritani as well. I mean, Toritani has been on first with second base vacant several times this year. I mean, you know, he still is walking at a decent clip. All, 14 of his or 10 of his hits, that he, I think he's got 10 hits or, no, 14, I think. 14 hits on the season. All of them have been singles. So that doesn't mean second has been available every time that he's gotten a hit or gotten a walk. But, you know, he's had plenty of opportunity as well, and he has not gotten the green light. Now, one reason that I'm guessing they may not have run against Kyojin is because they feared Kobayashi, the Kyojin catcher, who's got a really good arm. You know, I think he had the top rate as a catcher for throwing out runners at second last season. And he was also the WBC catcher for Samurai Japan. But I don't see that as a reason to not at least give it a try a couple of times.
No, absolutely. I mean, obviously handedness to the pitchers comes into play as well. But at a certain point, it starts being a trend no matter who's behind the plate, no matter who's on the mound. Like, that explains the Kyojin series, but that's not the only games they've played.
Right.
So, and they've been involved in a lot of close ones late. Like, their wins haven't been blowouts.
Yeah.
It's been situations where, you know, the green light makes sense and they just haven't gotten it. So, you know, the home runs are great, but if we're relying on that as a sum total of our offense, we don't have a Balentyn or, you know, a legitimate power threat in Eldred who's going to reliably be the guy to blow the game open late with a home run.
Exactly. And,
so I think a little bit of the aggressivity on the base pass will help the, you know, we're going to be a contact team this year. We're going to be a run manufacture team, National League Baseball, as you would call it, I guess Central League Baseball if you want, but it's going to be a lot more about moving guys over. And I think we have the speed to do that if we're willing to use it.
And, you know, we don't have great bunting ability. Not that I'm a proponent of the bunt anyways, but, you know, we've seen several guys fail. We saw Shunsuke whiff at 3 bunt attempts. We saw Uemoto fail on a bunt attempt this week.
Has he seen the field since, Shunsuke? I don't think he has. I would have benched him, I think.
Don't think so either, and I'm not too sad about that either. So.
Well, I mean.
But, you know, what was I going to say? Oh, yeah. I'm reading Akahoshi's memoirs right now. It's a book written by obviously the greatest base stealer in team history and a guy that I really wish Kanemoto would maybe throw a bit of more cash at or something, but get him on the coaching staff, get him to teach these guys base stealing. Because one of the things he mentions in his book is the average catcher, or even a good catcher, is only going to be able to get the ball to second base in 2 seconds. And he, that being Akahoshi, was able to get to second base in 3 seconds, which means then that the pitcher's job is to get the ball into the catcher's mitt in 1 second. Now, the best of the best can do that, but the point that Akahoshi was making is that the success of stealing bases or the lack of success, it's not about the catcher. It's technically not even about the pitcher. It's about being able to read the pitcher. It's about being able to catch kind of those just the subtlety of what the pitcher's doing. And if you can catch that, and if you can get the right jump, you're going to steal the base.
That's it. So, I mean, you steal off the pitcher. That's the mantra that you teach your kids. You're not stealing off the catcher. The arms are going to, one arm and another arm. Ultimately, it comes down to accuracy and power. But the difference between a hard throwing catcher and a soft throw or half soft throwing catcher is the tenth of a second to second base. The pitcher's mechanic takes up the vast majority of the time and the jump you can get off him. Hutchinson went up against a submarine pitcher this week.
Yes.
Like the easiest possible of all possible pitchers to go on.
A right-handed, soft-throwing submarine pitcher.
Exactly. Why are you not going on this guy?
Yeah. I didn't understand that either. And there were times, seriously, where I was kind of yelling at my TV, like, go for second, go for second. But obviously, I'm not the coach and I don't have the
– I could steal that base.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I could, but yeah. Anyway, so that's one of the things to me that has stood out about this Hanshin Tigers team so far as the hitting goes. The other one is – we've had a decent amount of long balls compared to seasons past, but our gap power has really been lacking as well. And I mean, I don't really know how to explain that fully, but I think we only have like a couple of doubles on the season in 8 games, which is not a lot, which means that all of our hits have either been singles or home runs pretty much.
I think that'll regulate itself over the course of the season, to be perfectly honest with you. I mean, obviously not every well-hit ball that Fumio Hojo gets a hold of is going to go over the fence just because he's, 5'9" or something. Mm-hmm. So he's, the power's there, but it's not reliably going to clear the wall, especially not Akoshian, and especially not dead center Akoshian.
Right.
So on 9 days out of 10, that ball that he hit out to dead center in the second inning of that game goes for a double to the wall.
Right.
So, you want it to clear the fence. Sure. They're hitting the ball well.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the lack of gap power is more kind of balls carrying more than we expected, rather than like any problem that needs solving or anything that coaching would kind of sort out.
I suppose you could be right. I mean, they are swinging hard, and obviously, the home runs are proof of that. So, it's definitely not for lack of a hard swing. And they've definitely got the lineup in place where all of our guys have got the potential to hit, for extra bases at the very least. We don't have, not that I want to knock guys or anything like that, but we don't, we're not filling our lineup with the Shunskes and the Yamatos and these guys that, are using their legs to get on base for the most part.
Flat hitters, but the speed is there. I mean, it's going back to it. It's not a matter of guys who like will hit a ball to the wall and then only wind up at first base.
Right.
It's, it's a hard running team. The guys who are hitting the ball to the wall are guys who will take second. And I think it might come back to a little bit of base running aggressivity as well.
Yeah,
you get the go sign from the first base coach. He decides if you're going to second or not. So
right.
I think kind of that same mentality that's holding guys up from the stolen bases might be holding them up from the extra base as well.
Gotcha. Another thing I wanted to talk about during this section was our use of catcher and just how our catcher has been doing. That would be Ryutaro Umeno, who I believe has been behind the mask for every inning of every game so far.
I always had a soft spot for Umeno.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did. I watched him come up, and he struck me when he came up as the kind of guy that would learn a lot from Kenji Jojima, who was the starting catcher when he first broke in,
mm-hmm.
Just because they struck me as very similar players. Kind of stocky, right-handed guys, a little bit of power pop when they need to have. Unfortunately, Jojima got injured and retired before he could really pass on any of his experience.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Umeno's kind of been coming in cold, but he's the type of guy that I like catching for a team. He's still got a bit to learn about leading a game. which is arguably the more important half of a catcher's job, but that'll come. But as far as the hitting goes, I think he is figuring it out in a way. I'm not sure what his average is on the season. I think it's pretty okay for where he hits in the order, though.
It's around 200, I think.
Well, I mean, you know, it's... I guess that's not as good as I thought it was, eh? But in any case, I've always had a bit of a soft spot for him because the power potential is there. Like, for an 8-hole leading up to the pitcher, it doesn't matter if you get on base. Mm-hmm. You're just hoping the guy clears the wall and cleans up whatever is left on base anyway.
Right.
So I don't mind it. You sound like you've got a guy that you'd rather see back there, though.
I don't, actually. Umeno, just for the record, is batting .214, and he has 5 RBIs. So like you were saying, you know, you're not looking for a guy to set the table, rather to bring guys home. And so he is doing his job in that respect, sure. No, one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about, and I really want your input because I don't have a lot of great information about this, but when I look at our guys' walk totals on the season, and that's where, you know, you were saying about, you know, he needs to maybe work on leading his game a little bit. Obviously, you know, it is the pitcher's mechanics. That's definitely a big part of it. It's the mechanic, the delivery, all that kind of stuff. But you look at it, Fujinami has 8 walks in 5 innings. Iwasada has 8 walks in 10 innings. Messenger has 6 walks in 10 and a third innings. Mateo has 5 walks in 6 innings. And Kyuji has 3 walks in 4 innings. Nomi has 3 walks in 9 and a third innings. So none of our guys really have great rates as far as that goes, other than... Akiyama. Now, one of the things that I've heard in the past about Umeno and have not fully verified is that he tends to call for a lot of, like, the nibbling pitches. You know, he's definitely a location catcher when it comes to calling the game. And sure. You know, that'll work in the favor of a guy that's got pinpoint control, but obviously our guys don't have it at this point in the season. So
no,
do you have a take
absolutely.
On that?
Absolutely. First of all, I mean, I think a lot of that can be chalked up to the pitchers. Like Fujinami, for example, as indicated by the pitch that he threw at Hatakeyama that triggered that whole kerfuffle the other day. Mm-hmm. It's not like he was kind of just like nibbling and missing. He was just flat out not finding the zone. Umeno would set up outside, it'd come inside. He'd set up, you know, low in the zone, and it would drop down into the dirt a foot before in front of home plate. Like, it was just not good pitches.
Right.
But once it starts happening across everybody in the staff, yeah, I think you can chalk that up to catching. And one of the most underrated catcher skills, and something that I've always been a big proponent of, is the pitch frame.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're a nibbling pitcher, to draw an MLB comparison, Russell Martin was always the best at this. He's the kind of guy that would call a pitch on the black and then bring it in to the strike zone in a way that the umpire will call it a strike, even if it was a little bit outside.
Right.
And I think that's a skill that Umeno needs to develop if he's going to start trying to nibble at guys. I mean, understand, like, Japanese pitcher mentality, outside of a few notable elite exceptions, is to not really go at guys, especially if you get ahead in the count.
Right.
If you go ahead 0-2, you're going to junk the next pitch 95% of the time, unless you're Masahiro Tanaka. And I think that mentality is kind of bled over into the way Umeno called games as well.
Right.
He seems to be hesitant to go right at guys, in particular like the big hitters on the opposing team.
Yeah.
And I mean, on the one hand, I don't know if this staff has the elite talent to do it outside of Fujinami. Like, not a whole lot of bat missing going on.
Mm-hmm.
So when you start going at guys, you can get burned. But, you know, if you're going to call a game like that, you need to have the skills to back it up. And I think if he can start framing those pitches, like getting those borderline calls, even if he doesn't necessarily deserve them, it's going to go a lot better.
Right. Right. Well, I think, you know, it's something that he's got to continue to work with the pitching staff as well on the off days and talk to them. And another thing that we sometimes don't even pay attention to, or at least maybe the average fan doesn't pay attention to, is we don't know which pitchers have got their stuff on which days. And so, for example, with a guy like Fujinami, you know, maybe his cutter was not working that day, or maybe his slider wasn't working that day. And so all of a sudden Umeno's got to go, okay, I've got to call fewer sliders. I've got to call fewer cutters. I've got to lean a little bit more on the fastball or on whatever it might be. That's going to affect how he calls the game, and that's going to affect the number, you know, the location of the pitches and all that kind of stuff as well.
That's a great point.
Yeah. So the other thing I wanted to mention about catchers is just that Sakamoto, our second round draft pick from 2015 draft, he's been out for a good amount of time. He broke a bone in one of his fingers, I think, on his catching hand, and so it may be a while before he's back. But I'm kind of intrigued to see what's going to happen when he comes back. Is he going to get a decent amount of playing time? Is he going to go back to being Nomi's main catcher and maybe for one more guy, or what the case is going to be? And also, what about Okazaki? Like, are they going to start to use him late in games? as a stronger defensive catcher or not. And so I really think that the catching puzzle is still an interesting one. Another one that they may do is they may bring in Campbell as a pinch hitter or something like that, put him at first, and then slide Haraguchi into catcher at the end of games. And I kind of doubt they'll do that, but it would be kind of cool to see.
No, I think for Haraguchi, that ship is sailed. I don't think they're going to put him behind the plate anymore. They want to protect that bat, and they want to protect it from, like, the, you know, catchers take a lot of abuse back there, and you're going to have a shorter career donning the tools of ignorance, as they call them, than you would over at first base. So I think that's the rationale there, and I don't mind it, per se, but it does mean that we have a weaker bat in the lineup. As far as defensive replacements go, there's been a lot of close games lately, a lot of games decided late. Mm-hmm. Which wouldn't necessarily be, they haven't played with late leads a whole lot outside of maybe a couple of the occult games. So I don't know if the situation has been right for defensive replacements.
Right.
Rather than like kind of having a big bat there to either pad the lead or else to kind of take it if you can. But yeah, as far as Okazaki goes, I think, you know, obviously Umino's going to kind of catch every inning of every game. Yeah. And whether it's Sakamoto later on or whether it's Okazaki sooner. Somebody's going to have to pick up some slack somewhere. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Well, I'd love to talk on a little bit more about this, but we have gone well over time. And so we are going to jump into predictions for next week.
What's going to happen with the record going to be? What's going to happen with the record going to be? What's going to happen with the record going to be? What's going to happen with the record going to be?
That being this week, because today is Tuesday, and tonight we are going to be starting a 3-game set against the Yokohama Bay Stars, and that'll be followed up by a 3-game set at Koshien against the Carp. So, apparently, Shoichi Ino is going to be starting for the Bay Stars against Fujinami tonight, and then it looks like they skipped Imanaga's spot in the rotation, and they've got a couple of foreign pitchers that they've been leaning on a little bit more, who may end up taking the next two games in the series. But what do you got against the Bay Stars? What do you think?
I mean, obviously, that's a key matchup just with the way the standings are right now. They're we're in third place, and they're right on our heels from fourth, just a game back from us. So hopefully, I mean, you know, the at Koshien, the home crowd will buoy them. So I like us 2-1 there.
That one's in obviously Yokohama.
Is it in Yokohama?
Yeah.
Well, maybe 1-2 then. Okay. Although Yokohama Stadium isn't really that scary, I guess. Give me 2-1.
Okay. Okay. I'm with you on that, 2-1 as well. Okay, and then for the 3-set back in our barn, I'm intrigued by what we're going to do with the pitching, because Aoyagi was skipped in the first 6 games. So Randy pitched on short rest on the Thursday of last week. Aoyagi's game was rained out. He only pitched like 2 1/3 or 2 2/3. So I can't help but think they may slip him into the Yokohama part of the week and then bring Randy back against the Carp on Friday. So I'm thinking maybe we might have a messenger Iwasada Nomi once again against the Carp, but this time at Koshien. You think it's going to go any better than the 1-2 we got in Hiroshima?
The Carp are so good. I mean, you would hope so, just because I think we're going to have to win one of those games. We want to keep at least on pace to maybe win the pennant. I don't think that's a long shot, but you know, just to make the climax series, you want to take at least one out of them. But this is a 7-1 team. 875 winning percent is going to be tough. So I'll give you an optimistic 2-1 with a knowing wink at the end of it. So that puts us at 4-2 on the week.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to give any wink, and I'm going to say 1-2, unfortunately. I would love to see a 2-1 as well. But like you said, the Carp are just very strong. They are riding an 8-game undefeated streak. I mean, they lost their opener against us, and since then, they have been almost perfect. You know, they've got the good pitching arms. I think Chris Johnson is going to come back with a strong outing because he had a real stinker against us in the opener.
No, we're going to blow him up again. Don't worry about it. We got him solved.
Okay. Okay. Knowing wink.
There you go.
So yeah, that's that. I'm going to go 3-3 on the week.
I'll take 4-2.
Okay. Well, we'll check in again in a week's time and see how both of us do. Just for some final announcements, I hope to be at Sunday's game. In fact, I think I will be there. And so if you're planning to be at the game on Sunday, hit me up with an email, thehunchingtigers@gmail.com. Maybe we can meet up before, after, whatever. It'd be fun to meet up with some other Hanshin fans. I always love to hear your comments about the podcast, about the website updates, all that kind of stuff. So drop us an email, send us a comment on Facebook, all that good stuff. So once again, thanks for your time, your passion for the Tigers. You can find this podcast, extra news, articles, and more at www.thehunchingtigers.com. You can also subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. Just type in the four magic words, Hanshin Tigers English News. Subscribe, write a review, and share with your friends and enemies. Get all the news instantly by following us on Facebook. Once again, search for the magic words, Hanshin Tigers English News. You can follow T-Ray on Twitter, at the Hanshin Tiger. Until next time, keep cheering until one of our coaches lands that drop kick and Ballantyne gets knocked down. Have a great week, everyone. Thanks for joining us, Eric.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
All right. Take it easy.